Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Bryan.
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that. You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
And welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. Here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side. From Mad Radio 92.7 FM, WMDX 1580 AM, and around the state on a local Civic Media radio station near you. It's a Tuesday afternoon, and I've got something on my mind. I want to know, what do you think Republican elected officials stand for here in Wisconsin? What do they stand for? There's quite a few of them in the Wisconsin state legislature, or in state capitol. What do they stand for? 844-967-2789. Want to hear your thoughts. If you're a conservative listener and you vote for these Republican lawmakers, what do they stand for in your mind? If you're a Democratic or liberal, progressive-leaning voter, and don't vote for these Republican elected officials statewide or in the state assembly, state senate. Love to hear your thoughts as well. 844-967-2789. You can call or text. Is it local control? Doesn't really feel like it when the stipulations and all the strings attached to reforming shared revenue or at the center of the Republican proposal to address shared revenue. Is it freedom? Doesn't feel like it when it comes to making your own healthcare decisions or deciding to marry who you love. Not a whole lot of freedom there. Is it addressing our workforce needs? Doesn't seem like it. They took all of last year off. We've had reports now that the state is going to be more than 100,000 workers shy by the end of this decade. And during the last legislative calendar year, 2022, Republican lawmakers were voting on no legislation. They wrapped up for 9 months, nothing on their docket. 844-967-2789. Want to know what you think Republican lawmakers stand for here in the state of Wisconsin? Because to me, it's really hard to gauge where they are on these issues. It feels like, to me, unless they're the ones coming up with the ideas, which, again, they took 9 months off last year. They took 9 months off in 2022. We are 5 months now into 2023, and they delayed a lot around the budget cycle. They didn't start holding Joint Finance Committee listening sessions until April 5th. They only held four of them before they decided last week to start the budget process by stripping out 545 different proposals out of the Evers budget. It doesn't seem like they want, they say they want to address these issues, but it doesn't seem like they're looking for common ground if they're not the ones coming up with the ideas. We got to meet them where their starting point is. There's no sense of compromise from their perspective. If there's compromise involved, it's other people compromising with them, not them compromising with other people. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and State Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu put out a statement last week when Governor Tony Evers said that in its current form, he would have to veto the shared revenue proposal that Republicans put together. And the Republican leaders of the State Assembly and State Senate said, well, it's very short-sighted of the governor. We talked to Democrats, Republicans, cities, counties, all the parties involved, but it doesn't really feel like the Republican lawmakers brought in, at least in good faith, people that disagree with them to address this problem. We've got reports out, according over to the Journal Sentinel, the Milwaukee Common Council rejecting the strings attached that Republican lawmakers want to put on Milwaukee County. The county and city do not want to go to a referendum to approve changes to address shared revenue. No other municipalities in Wisconsin would have to do that. Just the city and county of Milwaukee. So it doesn't seem like there's local control involved in there. Republicans say that they want to get people back to work, but they're so focused on removing and scaling back unemployment benefits. Because right now, the state's at a historic low for unemployment. They're not actually focused on objectives to get more people back into the workforce. Like, I don't know, paid leave. That would get individuals that say, well, the cost of childcare is so high right now that I can't go to work. I need to stay home and raise my family. They're not addressing childcare or paid leave or housing. Well, we might actually have a housing agenda, it seems like. It's an interesting proposal, but strangely enough, the Republicans and the Democrats that are getting together in the state legislature for this bipartisan initiative last week had $270 million from Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal stripped out, seeking to increase lower-cost housing. So now they're going to come together and try to come up with a different solution, but they can't actually meet the parties involved at a starting point. So it asks the question, what are Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin, what do they stand for? 844-967-2789, because that's what's at the top of my head today. It's really hard to have a negotiation and to compromise on a very large piece of legislation, like the budget or addressing shared revenue, without involving all parties. But you have to know where all those involved parties are at their starting points. And to me, it seems very difficult to gauge where Republican lawmakers are at their starting points, because they say that they stand for these things, local control, freedom. And they're not actually addressing any of these things. They stand for one thing, they say and do another. They say one thing and they do another. And it's very hard to be able to see where any of these budget talks are going, because it does feel like both sides are in a pretty rough stalemate right now. If the Republicans are only willing to go forward with this flawed shared revenue proposal, it seems likely that the only next steps, as Governor Tony Evers indicated last week, is that the governor's office is going to veto it. It's going to be very, very interesting to keep an eye on these budget talks here in Wisconsin. But what do Republicans stand for in this process? Is it just not giving Tony Evers any wins? Is it forcing through a budget that they're adamant on that does not actually address the shared revenue problem that Wisconsin is facing? I want to hear your thoughts. 844-967-2789. You can call or text. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. Coming up in the show, we're going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, coming at 2:30. Dan and I will recombobulate. He's got a guest columnist over at the Recombobulation Area breaking down the two sides of the shared revenue proposals, the governors and the Republican lawmakers in the state assembly and state senate. So we're going to recombobulate around that. We're also going to share some headlines. I want to get Dan's take on the firing of former head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, who had a statement out. So we're going to talk about that coming up as well. And we've got some updates surrounding officially what the end of the COVID-19 pandemic means for the state of Wisconsin. Something that I didn't have on my 2023 bingo card, and a shocking statistic about Wisconsin voter turnout back in November that's now being reported with all of those vote totals being tabulated. And so what it means for Wisconsin, this over at WPR, wisconsinpublicradio.org, with the COVID-19 public health emergency ending on May 11th, that's 2 days from now. WPR noting that you're probably going to have to pay more for a COVID-19 test if you want to take one. No longer going to be free. You're going to have to go to pharmacies, your local CVS's, Walgreens, other terrific local pharmacies in your community. It's likely insurance will still cover lab-based COVID tests, according to WPR, which are often more time-sensitive types of PCR tests, especially if those tests are ordered by a healthcare provider, but your cost for those lab-based tests may go up. Even if you have insurance, uninsured people may no longer have a way to get low or no-cost COVID testing. So again, when crises like this end, it's the least fortunate of us that are impacted the greatest. The uninsured going to have a hard time being able to get low or no-cost COVID testing. What it also means is you may have to be paying for vaccines and treatments. Free COVID-19 vaccines are being distributed currently, but it seems like programs may be ending, and there will be differences for different populations and insured groups whether or not a vaccine, which experts do believe may be rolling out on a more frequent basis, may be very similar to a flu shot, you may have to get every 12 months or so, not going to be free anymore with the expiring of the COVID-19 national emergency in 48 hours. So it's definitely something to be keeping an eye on. We're going to talk about these headlines and some more. But Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area joining us at 2:30. You can join me on the phone lines between now and then. 844-967-2789. Tangent of the day. What do Republican lawmakers stand for here in Wisconsin? I'm having a hard time telling. Want to hear your thoughts. And E, have you been following the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy?
No, sir. Just that I love Chris Pratt.
Just that you love Chris Pratt. Oh, well, it was a good one. I watched it last night. Highly recommend it. It was a good end of the trilogy as James Gunn now going to be leaving for DC instead of Marvel. So if you've got tangents on that, I'll take them as well. 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. We're going to be right back. Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. You can download the Civic Media app and take us with you wherever you go. You can also jump from station to station, hear all the terrific programming we have across Civic Media. You're in the 2 o'clock hour around the network. You got Dueling Tangents. You can also catch on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, right now. Chad Holmes on the Chad Holmes Show between now and 4 p.m. Coming up next, we got Matt Flynn Direct in the 3 o'clock hour. And then, everywhere across the Civic Media Radio Network, we got the Devil's Advocates show coming up at 4 from 4 to 6 every Monday through Friday. Download that Civic Media app, though, so you can take us with you wherever you go around the state of Wisconsin. Civic Media app, downloadable in the App Store or Google Play Store. And Evan, we got a little breaking news going on right now. We got an update. According to CNN, a verdict has been declared in the Donald Trump sexual assault case of E. Jean Carroll. Now, this is a civil case, not a criminal case, in, I believe, Manhattan court. Yes, a Manhattan federal jury, according to CNN, found that Donald Trump sexually abused E. Jean Carroll in a luxury department store dressing room in the spring of 96. The jury found him liable for battery in Carroll's civil trial against him based on that sexual assault claim. They not awarding damages in the rape aspect of that claim, but found liable for nearly $3 million for defamation. So pretty breaking news out of Manhattan today. Donald Trump found liable looks like for roughly $3 million in the civil case brought against him by E. Jean Carroll from a sexual abuse allegation from 1996. Now, found civilly liable for it, not criminally liable. So that is the breaking news here on Dueling Tangents. Evan, that's just one of the many different lawsuits currently the former president is facing. So you want to stay tuned to all of the excellent civic media programming. We'll be able to break news like that. But that is what we've got out of New York. Also, total of $5 million damages. Sorry, it is breaking. I'm reading it right now, E. but they also found that Trump should pay about $2 million in damages for her civil battery claim, bringing the total to $5 million. So between defamation and the civil abuse by E. Jean Carroll, Donald Trump held liable for $5 million, breaking, according to CNN, out of Manhattan earlier, just within the last couple of minutes. So, interestingly enough, we've got a something that surprised me, though. We got a headline as well over talking about youth voter turnout here in Wisconsin from last November's midterm elections. Now, the Census Bureau showed that nearly half of Wisconsinites under the age of 25 cast a ballot in November of 2022. And Evan, this is interesting to me. Young people don't vote, I thought. Almost half of voters in Wisconsin casting a ballot last November. Midterms, there was a hyper focus on the midterm elections here in Wisconsin. And it seems like young people got out to the polls. We saw those long lines in college campuses around the states, both last November and this spring. And voter turnout very much setting some records here in Wisconsin for and leading the nation last November when it comes to youth voter turnout.
Those polls are too close to the dorm rooms, Luke. I'm telling you, we're having turnout this high. We got to move those polls.
You got to move those polling locations
they
around?
Can't just roll out of bed and go vote. We can't allow it.
My polling location changed at least two or three times in the course of my college years. It was, and I just like lived in the same little vicinity. Like, yes, I did move apartments to apartments between, or junior and senior year, I had the same apartment. So no change there. But between new building construction and then polling places changing, it definitely is something that is absolutely a tactic people use, lawmakers use, to try to clamp down. You also can't use a student ID for voting. And that's something that absolutely needs to be addressed. You should be able to, with a signature on it, use a student ID as a valid form of voter ID in Wisconsin, in my opinion. But this the data over at the U.S. Census Bureau, which is subject to a wide range of margin error, WPR does note, shows that nearly half of voters age 18 to 24 cast a ballot in the contest that reelected Democratic Governor Tony Evers and sent Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson back to Washington for a third term. The numbers reflect an upward trend of voter engagements of young people, according to Abby Keyes, a deputy director of Tufts University Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, which researches youth civic engagement. In some ways, we kind of feel like we're seeing a little bit of a new normal with respect to youth voter turnout over the past three election cycles, Keyes said. So maybe taking that trend and tossing it out the window, E. Maybe young voters are going to be consistently voting at a higher turnout, according to this center at Tufts University, studying youth civic engagement. It will be interesting. I always say voting is a habit. It's not something that you do every now and then. It is a habit that you form. If you start to vote at a younger age, you will continue to vote throughout your lifetime. And that there's plenty of studies that prove that. And so by having people engaged at a younger age, civically engaged at a younger age, I think it bodes well. I think more democracy, more voting is a good thing for our democracy. More participation is a good thing. And it's great to see young voters are voting. I hate to see any efforts to try to repress those votes. But unfortunately, I have a feeling we've got more coming because that's what Republicans, as you alluded to, Evan, said was the solution after they saw this high youth voter turnout the last couple cycles here. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area coming up next. You can also join us on the phone lines. Share your tangents, 844-967-2789. You can follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents as well. You can send us a tangent there. Follow us after the show at Dueling Tangents on Twitter. 844-967-2789. Share a tangent with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across civic media. And I am now joined by Dan Schaefer, columnist and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, how are we doing on a Tuesday afternoon?
Doing well, Luke. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Always good to talk to you.
Yeah, appreciate you joining me on this Tuesday. And I'm excited to dive in on the shared revenue proposal that dropped right before we got on the air together last Tuesday. So it was hard for us to dissect what the Republican proposal truly had in it. But we're talking today. What's on my mind is it's hard to gauge in these budget negotiations, in the shared revenue talks, where Republicans are, what they stand for, what their motives are. Because of late, Dan, we've had a lot of Republicans saying one thing and then doing another. They strip out the low-cost housing provisions out of Evers' budget proposal. Then they try to have some bipartisan talks about addressing low-cost housing. They, for 2 years, are screaming about election integrity, and then strip out election integrity proposals out of the Evers budget last week. And they say they're for local control. And then they put all of these strings and statewide incentives on the local money that would be sent back to municipalities like counties, towns, villages through their shared revenue proposal. So having a hard time on this Tuesday afternoon, trying to figure out really where the Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin are, where their starting point is, where they're coming from, what they stand for, and excited to have you to join me in this conversation on a Tuesday afternoon, Dan.
Well, I think it's a really great point that you raised there, and it was one that I was thinking about too, with the budget negotiations and the decisions to remove so many items from the budget. You know, we just saw yesterday in Minnesota they passed a paid leave bill. And as I wrote about in a piece last week at Heartland Signal, you know, the paid leave has huge majority support from both parties in Wisconsin. It's like something like 95% in Democrats, over 60% of Republicans support paid leave, and they're getting that out of the budget. And I think this is telling because, you know, maybe they insert some version of it back in some, you know, maybe not, probably not. But even if they were to do that, I think they have to do it on their terms, right? Any type of proposal that they would, you know, maybe want to enact, or maybe that they could get their caucus to get behind, is the approach that they always take is that they have to, it has to be a Republican bill. You know, this is something I've heard from Democratic lawmakers in the state legislature as well, that there's things that they might like and want to pass, but if it's in a bill introduced by Democrats, they're just going to ignore it. And then, you know, kind of recraft it into their own legislation. So I think what it ultimately comes down to, especially under the leadership of Robin Voss in Wisconsin, it is just always, always, always power consolidation at all costs. It's not about getting things done. It's not about, doing the will of the people of Wisconsin. It's always about power consolidation. And we've seen that so much, you know, over the past decade plus in Wisconsin, as the Wisconsin state legislature has amassed all kinds of power and money within this one governing body, you know, at the expense of so many others. And so now it has this outsized amount of power and money and influence. And we're seeing it in the shared revenue bill. We're seeing it in the budget. We're seeing it in so many issues up and down the list in Wisconsin. So I think it just always comes back to consolidating power.
Yeah. And another area where the Republican lawmakers here in Madison are attempting to consolidate that power would be removing advisory referendums, something that mm-hmm. Republicans use themselves back in the spring elections. They put advisory referendums on the ballot for the spring elections in hopes that it would gain more Republican or conservative leaning voters. And some of those advisories passed with almost like 75% support. Even though they were very poorly worded, I have a feeling that we haven't heard the end of those yet. It didn't work when it came to the top of the ticket. The state Supreme Court race was still an almost 11-point margin. And so now that they saw, oh, well, we can't even use the advisory referendums in our benefit, they're looking to remove them. They don't want to do those anymore. And it's a non-binding advisory referendum. It doesn't even have the ability to make law here in Wisconsin. But Republican lawmakers like Assembly Speaker Robin Foss seem to be indicating they want to do away with them if they're going to address shared revenue.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, I noted this recently as well, but there have been more than 30 counties in Wisconsin who have passed advisory referendum like that on the issue of fair maps. And so we have this situation where this is the most gerrymandered state legislature in the country. And not only are they locking people's voices out by gerrymandering them so significantly, they're making it so people can't, you know, make their voices heard through these advisory referendums, saying they're not okay with this process. And I think those are the type of things that, you know, can be looked at a lot of different ways when analyzing these types of outcomes in these referendums too.
Yeah. So my question would be, I guess just spitballing here, do you think we got to invest in some Inception-like technology to just start whispering to these Republican lawmakers in their sleep the ideas that could help Wisconsin address some of its problems, like 130,000 workers shy by the end of the decade? Do we just have to make them think through their dreams that they're coming up with these solutions to address those? Or I don't know how we get them to be like, okay, fine, it's all of a sudden a Republican proposal. Let's work together on it. Like it's interesting to me that it feels very childish almost that, oh, I'm only going to pass something to address this problem if I'm the one that gets credit and I'm the one that seems like it came up with it.
Right. This has just been the Robin Voss MO for his entire time as Assembly Speaker. Like this is just, you know, it can't be any, you can't give the Democrats a win on anything ever. Have to obstruct at all costs. But I think that is ultimately undermining their own success in statewide elections. I mean, I think, you know, and I've said this on a couple different occasions now, is that I think Republicans can point to Robin Voss as a reason that they continue to lose these statewide elections. Like if you're going to keep pushing and keep obstructing and keep playing to the extreme fringe of the party, keep losing the center, keep losing with women, that you're just not going to be able to win these statewide elections. And I think that's why Democrats and Democratic-backed candidates have won 14 of the last 17 statewide races. And I think, you know, the key ones at the state level recently have really hammer home that message. Tony Evers winning, you know, re-election by a larger margin in a Republican advantage midterm than he won in a Democratic advantage midterm in 18. Obviously, like you mentioned, Jana Prosewitz winning by an almost 11-point margin. So I think, you know, Republicans are going to keep doing these things at the legislative level, but they're not going to be able to advance any kind of agenda because they keep losing statewide races.
Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on a Tuesday afternoon by Dan Schaefer, founder and columnist at the Recombobulation Area. I think you're absolutely right, Dan. I think the Republicans are going to, we've seen this trend that they're having a harder and harder time fielding statewide candidates because, yes, they have the majority in the state legislature, but it is hurting them, their stances that they take for these statewide elections. And we even see it. You'd think that in 2024 there would be Republican lawmakers or activists or businessmen that would be chomping at the bit to get in and take on U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, but as far as we've heard so far, it's been crickets. And so it's very telling to see there's not a deep bench when it comes to Republicans looking to step up for a statewide race. But that's something we're going to continue to keep an eye on as 2024 gets closer and closer. I'm trying to push it back as much as I can, Dan. I don't want to dive into the 2024 cycle too early because it seems extremely early right now. But something that we can focus on, a very large issue, is the shared revenue proposals. We teased it a little bit earlier. You got a guest columnist over at the Recombobulation area this week breaking down the differences between the Republican lawmakers' proposals and the proposal by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. What can you tell us about kind of the space between the two sides when it comes to these proposals, Dan?
Yeah, so Phil Rocco, who's a professor at Marquette University, has been a regular contributor at the Recombobulation area, and he is really, really good at breaking down complicated legislation like this. So he's written a couple pieces at the Recombobulation area. One, kind of charting the differences in percentage increase in each county. You may have seen some of those charts going around where you see Milwaukee at the very bottom. As far as, you know, the municipalities, the counties that are getting increases, every county getting at least, or every municipality getting at least a 10% increase, but that increase can vary greatly depending on the size of the municipality and a whole bunch of other reasons cooked into this as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that the main thing to understand is the difference. The main two things to understand is the difference between the Evers plan for reforming shared revenue and the Assembly Republicans plan for reforming shared revenue is Evers plan has much, much more money going to local governments. And the Republican bill has a far greater number of restrictions, mandates, prohibitions, and preemptions. So I think it's more money and less regulation on the Evers side. It's less money and more regulation on the Assembly Republican side. And so I think, you know, we kind of set up an interesting dynamic last week when the bill was officially introduced. It had a public hearing, and Tony Evers, before the public hearing even got really underway, threatened a veto. And I think what's going to be interesting here in these next couple of weeks, as this bill continues to get negotiated, worked on behind the scenes, you know, to make changes to it, is going to be, what does Evers need to see in order to have a bill that he might be able to sign? Because I think everybody on all sides agrees that this bill needs to get over the finish line this year, especially when it comes to, you know, kind of the fiscal cliff arriving for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. A number of other municipalities around the state facing some really difficult situations without a solution. And, you know, Republicans have kicked the can down the road in so many different sessions for this shared revenue bill, for some sort of Milwaukee local control issue on that. And so they've just kicked the can down the road for so long. It has to happen now.
Yeah.
I think the question will be, what needs to happen in order for the governor to be able to sign this?
Yeah, and you'd think before putting out a plan, Republican lawmakers may have, you know, consulted the governor's office and said, hey, what can we include? Where can we find some common ground? How can we make this work, rather than just putting out their proposal and then leaving it to Evers, have to say, well, as is, I'm not signing that. So it will be interesting to see. Dan, if our listeners want to, you know, see all the charts and the graphs and all the excellent guest columns at the Recombobulation area and all the excellent work that you do there, how can they learn more? Where can they go to see all of those terrific pieces?
Yeah, you can find us at the recombobulationarea.substack.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, on Instagram, Facebook, at the Recombobulation area. And so, yeah, I'd really encourage you to take a look at the charts in this bill, because this is a really big bill that makes is proposing some really big sweeping changes to just the overall relationship that the state has with local government. It's not just about the funding in a lot of these. It is just about the way state and local government is structured in Wisconsin. So, you know, this bill has been, you know, kind of the type of thing that's been in talks for a long time. Now we have the actual text of it. We need to do everything we can to try to, you know, and we're trying to do everything we can at the Recombobulation area so that our readers can best understand what exactly this bill is, what exactly it would do.
Yeah. So it's the Recombobulation area on Substack. You can find all of Dan's excellent work there. We've also got an update about how the Milwaukee County feels about the stadium for AmFam field repairs, and going to take Dan's reaction on the firing of Mike Budenholzer, since that has happened as well since we've last been on the air together. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. We got one more segment left in the day. Dueling Tangents is going to be right back. Tangents. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on a Tuesday afternoon for some general recombobulation by Dan Schaefer, founder and columnist of the Recombobulation Area over on Substack. And you can share a tangent with us, 844-967-2789. We got Kurt from Madison calling in on this Tuesday afternoon. Kurt, what's on your mind?
Hi. I would contend that when we speak of Voss and his behavior, we need to broaden the scope on this. And what I mean by that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me anymore because I changed phones, but if you look at his district and people who voted for him and put him in office, these people are perfectly fine with his behavior. Matter of fact, they encourage his behavior. So we need to step back more. When you touched on it and said, well, what do we have to do to reach out to the Republicans to get them to play nice? Well, I would say you can't reach out to the representatives we have now because they're not going to change their ways. We have to start reaching out to those who are pulling the lever to put him in power, in office. If you can't get to them and get them to understand that they're not only undercutting their own personal life structure, but they seem to take pleasure in undercutting everyone else's, you will never solve this problem, ever.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt, it's an interesting thing. The accountability that could be had for the assembly speaker with the current maps that he's got structured, he's got a pretty strong lock on the majority in the state assembly with the way the maps are drawn now. But his district is a fairly safe district. I don't think he's going to be held accountable by moderates and individuals on the left side of the political spectrum. He was almost ousted by a farther right candidate last fall that had the support of Voss's go-to for election investigations, which they weren't really. It was just hearsay and decrying that there was fraud without actually ever having to produce evidence of fraud. But that was the closest thing to accountability that Robin Voss had to the voters. And I don't know if we're going to get that in the 63rd Assembly District.
Yeah, I think in the run-up to the election in 2020, I think a lot of people were really frustrated with Voss. You know, he had just coming off that star turn he had as going to sit at that April 2020 elections with the ridiculous suit and saying you're incredibly safe to go out. A candidate did jump into that race who was seen as a credible challenger, and he immediately faced so many threats to himself and his family after announcing that he dropped out within like 2 weeks of announcing. So you're right, it's a very toxic environment that Robin Voss surrounds himself with. But I think to get to the caller's question there, I think there's also an element of, you know, the rest of the Republican Assembly caucus. Like, why do they continue to support this guy? He's not doing a good job. But I think at the same time, you know, they have seen him. He's the longest serving assembly speaker in state history. They see him as this, you know, as a leader, as a guy who was able to, you know, kind of shepherd their caucus through the Walker years to get a lot of the things passed that they wanted to pass, you know, lock them into the maps that made it so much easier on the life of, you know, all of these assembly Republicans who run in these super safe districts and don't have to face like real campaign challenges. But I do think, you know, at some point that dynamic's going to change. Like we saw Jim Steinke resign last year. You know, we saw we've seen some other leaders move to different places. John Nygren left the assembly. Scott Fitzgerald ran for Congress. Voss is kind of the last left, you know, of that leadership group. And I do wonder, you know, how long he plans to stay in that role.
I think he's going to be holding on for dear life and as long as he can for his political career, because it's a nice gravy train while he's got it. They got full-time salaries last year for, what, 2-3 months of legislating? Like, that's all they had to do in 2022. They got to put their feet up and then just run again in November, but many of them have safe districts, as you pointed out, because of the maps. So
if and when he ever decides to resign, we'll be throwing a party at the recombobulation area, that's for sure.
I know the exact way that you should pop the bottle of champagne. There's a video that you can just recreate from last fall, and I would
highly... You and I will have to recreate that video.
I count me in. I am there. I will bring the champagne myself. So, and we can recreate it. But one of the other headlines of the day, Dan, County Board Committee unanimously rejects any local tax money to renovate American Family Field. This written up by Ricardo Torres over at the Journal Sentinel. And the committee on the Milwaukee County Board saying no. We're not going to use county dollars to fund these renovations to American Family Field, home of the Milwaukee Brewers. And an interesting quote jumped out from Ryan Clancy, one of the supervisors. You know the legislation is bad when both the socialists, speaking of himself, Ryan Clancy is a member, he identifies as a socialist, and the conservatives agree to enough to sign on the same resolution. Public dollars should not be going toward billionaires, especially not if they're blackmailing us with a threat to move to a different city. Your thoughts on the county board's committee taking this unanimous vote saying, no, we do not recommend using any county dollars on these renovations?
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting vote. It came because there were two votes that this committee had, the Intergovernmental Relations Committee had. One was about the Assembly Republicans' shared revenue bill. They voted 4-1 to oppose it. The one, you know, more conservative member of the board was the one who was in favor of it. And then it was 5-0 opposing Milwaukee County funds for American Family Field. And this kind of gets back to a point that I made in a column a couple weeks ago about the nature of this Brewer Stadium funding deal. The fact that it's happening at the same time as we're having this shared revenue and local control conversation about Milwaukee and Milwaukee facing this fiscal cliff, it makes it that much more difficult. Because, you know, Tony Evers' proposal was just to say, hey, we're going to slice off this piece of the surplus and fund upgrades at the stadium. And Robin Voss said, nope, that's dead on arrival. We need local dollars for the project. Well, we're negotiating with the state because Milwaukee doesn't have any local dollars for anything, much less a project like this right now. And it's already committing $4 million a year in shared revenue to fund Fiserv Forum as well. So it's just a really difficult time to be having that conversation. There was one public comment that came in during that committee hearing from a citizen who opposed any use of public money for the stadium. He said, one suggestion I have is instead of corporate handouts, we could host a financial literacy course for multimillion and billionaires where they can learn how to save money and apply for loans. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a good one. Unfortunately, we're out of time for your Budenholzer reactions, but I do hear that there was a podcast version of some of those reactions you may have gave over at the recombobulation area. So folks, you're going to have to go check that out. Thanks so much for joining me this Tuesday afternoon, Dan. Can't wait to have you back. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks for having me. Bucks and Six.
Bucks and Six next year.